From Greenville, South Carolina, we present Let the Bible Speak. Let the Bible Speak is the radio ministry of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America, preaching Christ in all His fullness. Welcome once again to Let the Bible Speak. Today we continue a series of studies in Paul's Epistle to the Romans. Messages preached by Dr. Alan Cairns, founder of the Let the Bible Speak radio ministries. We'll hear from Dr. Cairns in just a few minutes. First of all, we invite you to enjoy this devotional thought from the pen of the great 19th century English preacher Charles Haddon Spurgeon, as found in his collection called Morning and Evening.
This morning's text is found in Acts chapter 4 and verse 13. And they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. A Christian should be a striking likeness of Jesus Christ. You have read Lives of Christ beautifully and eloquently written, but the best life of Christ is His living biography, written out in the words and actions of His people. If we were what we profess to be and what we should be pictures of Christ, yea, such striking likenesses of Him, that the world would not have to hold us up by the hour together and say, "Well, it seems somewhat of a likeness," but they would, when they once beheld us, exclaim, "He has been with Jesus. He has been taught of Him. He is like Him. He has caught the very idea of the holy man of Nazareth, and he works it out in his life and everyday actions." A Christian should be like Christ in his boldness. Never blush to own your religion. Your profession will never disgrace you. Take care that you never disgrace that. Be like Jesus, very valiant for your God. Imitate Him in your loving spirit. Think kindly, speak kindly, and do kindly, that men may say of you, "He has been with Jesus." Imitate Jesus in His holiness. Was He zealous for His master? So be you. Ever go about doing good. Let not time be wasted. It is too precious. Was He self-denying, never looking to His own interest? Be the same. Was He devout? Be you fervent in your prayers. Had He deference to His Father's will? So submit yourselves to Him. Was He patient? So learn to endure. And best of all, as the highest portraiture of Jesus, try to forgive your enemies as He did. And let those sublime words of your Master, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," always ring in your ears. Forgive as you hope to be forgiven. Heap coals of fire on the head of your foe by your kindness to him. Good for evil, recollect, is godlike. Be godlike then, and in all ways and by all means, so live that all may say of you, "He has been with Jesus."
His love and power controlling,
One of the chief characteristics of the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century was the preeminent place given to the Bible. The Reformers' motto was, "The Bible alone, the religion of the Protestants." Men such as Martin Luther and John Knox insisted that the Holy Scriptures contain everything necessary for Christian faith and practice. It is important for believers in the 21st century to understand the central significance of the Bible in daily living and in the battle for spiritual truth. Let the Bible Speak is making available free of charge a booklet called The Bible and the Protestant Reformation, published by the Trinitarian Bible Society. To obtain your copy, simply email info@faithfpc.org. That's info@faithfpc.org. If you wish, you may call us at 864-244-2408. That's 864-244-2408. If you prefer regular mail, you may simply write Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. That's Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. Just ask for your copy of The Bible and the Protestant Reformation, and we'll be delighted to provide it. As Dr. Cairns continues these studies in the Epistle to the Romans, he brings the next portion of a message entitled, Why We Must Be Delivered from the Law. As we've seen, the main objective of Chapter 7 is to deal with God's law, its functions, and its limitations. The clear teaching of the New Testament is that sinners cannot be saved by keeping the law. This is not because the law is sinful, but because it requires perfect obedience, which no man can render. All the law can do is expose sin and condemn it. An essential point here is that the law not only condemns the act of sin, but the very thoughts and feelings of sin. Only when this is understood will the sinner know the awfulness and ugliness of sin. Now Dr. Cairns continues this message, Why We Must Be Delivered from the Law.
All men have the awareness of sin. Even the vilest sinners in the world will tell you there's something wrong with the world. We all know there's something wrong. There's an awareness. But there's another kind of knowledge, and that's a deep personal conviction of the nature of sin, the guilt of sin, the pollution of sin, and the obnoxiousness of sin before a holy God. And it's of this latter kind of knowledge that Paul is speaking here in verse 7. As I've said, he uses two different verbs in talking about the knowledge of sin. Let me sort of translate slash paraphrase what he's saying. He said, I would never have really understood, perhaps the way we would put it, I would never really have appreciated sin for what it really was without the convicting work of the law. And then he goes on to say, I would never have perceived, I would never have genuinely realized the true state of affairs in my heart had not the law convicted me of the wickedness of lust and of evil desire. You see, what Paul is talking about here is the working of the law, is that it brings an overwhelming realization to a man of his sin. Now watch him carefully, for here Paul goes to a radical depth that very few preachers are willing to go to. And in fact, most fundamental and evangelical churches vociferously repudiate. But they are wrong and Paul is right. Watch him carefully. This conviction of sin is not a conviction simply that what we have done is wrong, but it's a conviction of a depravity that lies deep within our very nature. Notice the end of verse 7. For I had not known or perceived lust. The idea is, I would not never have realized that lust was sin. I would never have named my desire as sin. It took the law of God to do that. And when the law of God came, it exposed my inward being. And not only what I was doing to be wrong, not only what I was saying to be wrong, but what I was feeling to be wrong, what I was desiring to be sin in the sight of God. You notice that he takes the 10th commandment as the great confirmation of his point. I say confirmation. Most preachers take this second part of verse 7 to be an illustration of the first part, where he says, I had not known sin but by the law. For example, I would not have known what lust was except the Bible had said, you shall not covet. And there you've got sin as the general and lust as a particular example of a part of sin. That's not what Paul is saying. These two parts of the verse are equivalent. This is not an illustration. This is a confirmation of what he has just said. You see, the sin and the lust are the same thing. They are describing the inner principle of sin that corrupts a man's nature. Or you could take it flows from that corrupt nature. Paul is saying, when the law of God gets to me, when it got to me, it taught me that the mere desire of sin is sin, even if it is never acted out. You've probably heard preachers, and I certainly have, who limit sin to specific acts of sin. Now, those acts are sinful, but nothing shows the depravity of man and his antagonism to a holy God more than this. Man loves to externalize sin. It's only mere acts. And believing this, sinners can actually feel good about themselves. Paul goes on to say this. They may be quite complacent about their state. He says he was alive. What he meant was, he was not at all alarmed. He had not been leveled into the dust. He had not been slain by conviction. He felt alive to God. He felt spiritually well. He was absolutely satisfied with his own state before a holy God. As long as sin only consisting of acts, Paul didn't do this, and he didn't do that, and he didn't do the other thing. And when he compared himself with other vile and guilty sinners, oh, he could stand back like the Pharisee he was. He could puff out his chest and say, concerning the righteousness which is of the law, I am blameless. I was alive, says Paul. But then the law came. When it comes, it penetrates much more deeply. It goes beyond the surface and the shallowness of human appearances. And behind the act of sin, there lies that evil principle produced from a corrupt nature whose lusts strive against God's law, by which it stands exposed and condemned. But I want you to notice what Paul is saying. Without the application of the law of God to the heart, men will never take sin seriously. Their views of sin will be lax. Why? Because they have never really encountered the holy law of God. Have you ever heard people talk like this? I'm not a bad person. I don't do any harm to anybody. And the whole idea is, really, why are you talking to me about needing to be saved? Why are you talking to me as if I were some vile and filthy sinner? I'm a good person. Can you not see this? How do people think that way? They think that way because they have never encountered the law of God. To them, the desire for sin, that inner revolt of the heart against God's law, the inner lust, the desire that they would never act out, it's harmless. It's natural. It's even beneficial. I have read some of the advice given by psychiatrists / psychologists / Christian counselors. And they have dealt with some of these things. And they've really said, you know, they're harmless in themselves because they're only thoughts. In some way they may even help you to overcome if you're just going through lust and sin. And some of you young people will be fighting this day by day as you're being bombarded with things that are wicked. And the advice of the world is, don't worry, as long as it's all in your head, as long as it's just your imagining, as long as it's just your visualizing, it's harmless. And it may even be helpful. And I'm here to tell you, man, it's damning to the soul. Damning to the soul. Until the law of God comes, men will never take sin seriously. They externalize it. They trivialize it. They preen themselves in their self-righteousness. They're so complacent about what they are and how good they are, when all the time the law of God tears away the mask. And it shows behind that mask a heart that's as foul and dark and rebellious and lustful and sinful and wicked as hell itself. You know, my friend, that's exactly why in the preaching of the gospel, there must be the preaching of the law of God. Now, the law is not the gospel, but the law is a preparatory message to show men their need of the gospel. People talk about the easy believism of the days in which we live. And this is a huge, huge scandal in evangelical Christianity. If I understand 1 Corinthians chapter 3 properly, and I believe I do, and I have to confess it makes me tremble as a preacher when I read 1 Corinthians 3. It should make every preacher tremble. Concerning that day when we stand before God and we give account of our ministry. And it's dealing particularly with preachers who are admitting to the Church of Christ people who are not saved at all. You add them to the numbers. It makes the church roll look good. You clock up the decisions. We have 5,000 decisions. And what's the use if you have 5,000 baptized candidates for hell? What's the use? People with decisions that mean nothing. They're all mixed up. Why? Because they have never, never been brought to a conviction of sin. They've never been brought face to face with the law of God. Is it any wonder they have no appreciation for grace when they have never felt the awfulness of guilt? Jesus said that the one who has been forgiven much will love much. The one who feels guilt in all its depths will feel grace in all its glory. This is a vital part of the presentation of the gospel. Because though the law cannot save a man, it shows him his need to be saved. And it shows him that depravity that's deep-rooted in his heart will bring him down to death in the end. As verse 10 says, the commandment which was ordained to life I found to be unto death. So why must we be delivered from the law? Because for all its innate perfection, all it can do with sin is to expose and condemn it. But there's one final reason why we must be free from the law if we're ever to be saved. And it's this, that the law affords sin a base of operation to work deception and death in all who remain under it. Notice the wording of verse 8. And watch the terms carefully. Sin taking occasion by the commandment wrought in me all manner of concupiscence, for without the law sin was dead. Sin, that evil corrupt principle within our nature, taking occasion, without wasting too much time on this, you can take this as a sort of a military expression, making a base of operation. Sin makes the commandment the base of its operations, and it wrought, the word means it worked effectively, powerfully in me to produce all manner of evil desire. Now once again, Paul is emphasizing that the desire of evil is sin. Now the question is, how does the law of God provide sin with a base of operation? The answer is in two ways. And you can readily identify with this. See, it's the psychology. And I use that word in a biblical sense. Psychology is the science of the soul as revealed in the Word of God. I'm not talking about the pseudo-science that masquerades under the title. Psychology, as here exhibited, is absolutely perfect. The law provides sin with a base of operation because it provokes the sinner to rebel. We all know that. We've all felt that. You know it in everyday life. Little Johnny has just learned to walk. And you goo and you oh and you ah. And you have your little china ornament sitting there and you say to Johnny, don't touch it. And you turn your back. What's the very first thing that the little rebel goes to touch? No, I know you're Johnny, not a little rebel. You think that? You have a long way to go, ma'am. You're going to learn a whole lot before you're much older.
Been listening to Let the Bible Speak, the radio ministry of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America. We hope you've enjoyed and benefited from today's program. We're here as your servants for Christ's sake. If we can be of any further help to you in the things of the Lord, we invite you to contact us. Our mailing address is Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. That's Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. If you wish, you may call us at 1-864-244-2408. That's 1-864-244-2408. Our email address is info@faithfpc.org. That's info@faithfpc.org. If you would like to learn more about the Free Presbyterian Church of North America, we invite you to visit our website, www.fpcna.org. That's www.fpcna.org. This is Charles Kelch saying thank you for listening. and inviting you to join us again as we let the Bible speak.